And welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland. We have a couple of guests today, Alessio Bax and Lucille Chung. They are pianists, and they perform separately, but they also perform often together, as they are going to be doing this evening at Farley's House of Pianos. They're going to be performing music for piano four hands, including works by Stravinsky, and that would be Petrushka, his complete ballet as transcribed by Stravinsky himself. The 16 sparkling waltzes, maybe the most cheerful things Brahms ever wrote, pound for pound. And four tangos by Astor Piazzolla as arranged by them. Welcome to the Midday.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
You don't seem to play up too much in your publicity the husband and wife aspect of your performing. Is there any particular reason for that, or is that a misconception on my part? They're shaking their heads. No? They look at each other? No?
Who's going to take this one?
Well, I'll take this one. The main reason is that, your observation is absolutely right. There is no particular reason why we don't play it up, but let's say that we've been focusing a lot on our single solo careers, and then I've taken these opportunities to play together as often as they came. It's great music. We love to play together. We get to travel together, which is fantastic, and it's nice for a change. And it just so happens that they become more and more important in our schedule.
Do you agree with that, Lucille?
That's correct.
Okay. For 10 points. The compatibility scale. Congratulations. Now, Alessio, you come from Italy?
Yes, I was born in Italy, in Bari, southern Italy, in the heel of the boot. And then I moved to the States, to Dallas, to study at Southern Methodist University in Dallas in 1994. And then I've been in the States since.
Now you've got that same last name as an English composer, Bax, Bax.
Yes, no relation that I know of, but I could make one up if you like.
Work on that and get back to me. And Lucille, you're originally from Montreal, is that right?
That's correct. I was born and raised in Montreal, and when I was 13, I left to study at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia. Then I also studied at Juilliard. Then I lived in Europe for a while. I studied at the Mozarteum in Salzburg.
You have quite the pedigree.
I'm not done yet. I also studied at the Hochschule für Musik in Weimar in Germany, and also studied in Italy at the famous Piano Academy in Imola, and finally at SMU with Joaquina Chucaro. So,
Are you through studying?
Yes, yeah.
You're finally. Never through studying. Never. You're always studying every single day, right? That's what we say.
Yes.
Always.
Okay. Let's be optimistic.
It's an interesting question, though. Once you finish your ostensible studies, how do you continue to develop? I mean, you're out there obviously performing professionally, both together and individually. How do you develop once you're out of school in the strict sense of the word?
Well, I think just the fact that you perform a lot, that's a learning process. We actually play a lot for each other, so we're our worst and best critics, I would say. And we also actually play for our teacher sometimes when we happen to be in the same town.
You mean your former teacher?
Yes,
or your
former teacher, Joaquina Chucaro. And I think just performing is a learning curve. Every day is different.
But do you have people who, I mean, whether it's the reviewers or people who come up to you at receptions after a performance and say, I think you kind of rushed this or that. Or
lots of people do that.
Do they?
Yeah, you say thank you.
but then does it ever kind of like stick in your head and you think a couple, maybe they were right? Do you ever weigh that kind of criticism in terms of the way you develop as a performer?
Yeah, sure. But I think also we are our own worst critics, as Lucille said, and each other's worst critics. So we're pretty covered by that. Then, of course, if someone says something we haven't thought about, we consider and we weigh how that affected the performance. But it's really rare that someone would come and offer a criticism that we haven't thought about, or between the two of us, yeah. Unless it's something that it's not musically related, like, I didn't shine my shoes, or which is very, very good criticism, but
that means they're watching your pedaling anyway.
Absolutely.
Interesting question there, too, because you are available on video, performing together, and there is quite a strong, I'm saying this on the radio, I realize, but there's quite a strong visual component to what you do when you perform together. Do you ever kind of work out how flamboyant to be? I mean, for example, Lucille, at one point I saw you put your elbow on the piano, you know, on the music stand part of the piano while he's playing.
That's just a
necessity, really. Yeah, there's very limited space.
Yeah. I don't think we practice that. It just kind of comes naturally. We've been performing a lot this year, especially, and it comes naturally. I don't think we choreograph much.
No. I mean, there's pieces very extreme, like what we're playing tonight, the Stravinsky Petrushka and the Piazzolla tangos. There's really, it tries to fit, especially Stravinsky, the whole orchestra onto one keyboard, and there's just very limited space. And we're two people. Thankfully, Lucille is my wife, and she's not too big, as you can see. So that works out fine. But there's, you know.
Oh, I think there is one point. It was a little hard to tell. It was all happening so fast that I believe, Alessio, you actually literally had your arms around Lucille. You were playing on either side of her.
Yes.
She was playing
well,
with
I have to say that's maybe a little bit choreographed, but that's our own arrangement of the Piazzolla. So as a tango, I think we decided to do that. Also for musical reasons. I think, I have to confess that's probably the only choreographed move that we have.
Yeah, you caught us there.
Are some composers kind of more interesting than others when it comes to the way they plan a piece of music for two players? In other words, I've heard that Schubert liked to arrange his piano forehands pieces in such a way that the players really got pretty cozy, and that this was a way to meet girls. You know,
well,
be at a party somewhere and play the piano, do a forehands piece, and suddenly the hands are overlapping and the thighs are together.
Well, we're both married. We're not supposed to say anything about that. But, no, actually, you're right. But also his music is, especially, you know, talking about Schubert, it happens in a quite limited range on the keyboard. Then when you go to Stravinsky, where he uses every key there is on the keyboard, and almost more than you can have some more distance and also crossings. I mean, it varies a lot. But in Schubert, I think the range is more limited, then hence, you know, you have that closeness.
What about the crossings? How necessary are those? I mean, why couldn't Lucille play treble, or for example, and you play bass and not cross over so much? Is that just how necessary is it?
I think you can rearrange a few of them, but when it came to Stravinsky, he was a pianist himself, and he wrote this to play, and he really knew what sounded better.
On the keyboard.
It could be just the way things sound, or also coordination. You know, if my right hand is doing a completely different thing, then it might be easier for me to play the way it's written rather than rearrange it and relearn it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. Now that you mention it, even in piano two hands pieces, going back a long way, there are plenty of places where the right hand will cross over the left.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you have composers that were very good pianists or very good at the keyboard, and they knew the instrument. They knew how the instrument sounds best, so they knew how to do it.
Well, let's look at some of your solo work here. This is a piece I didn't know existed in this form that Lucille has recorded on her label, 21.
That's right, Disque 21, Universal Canada.
Go Canada. This is actually Georges Bizet's arrangement for solo piano of the second piano concerto of Camille Saint-Saëns.
That's correct.
And we'll hear the final movement, which I suspect very aptly is called Presto. That's the finale of an entire piano concerto boiled down into a piano piece for two hands, believe it or not. The original piano and orchestra by Camille Saint-Saëns, that's his second piano concerto, and it was transcribed for piano solo by Georges Bizet and played by one of our two guests today, Lucille Chung. and she and the other half of her duo are here to perform tonight at Farley's, Alessio Bax being the other half of the equation. Okay, Alessio, could you have played that?
Oh, maybe with an orchestra I could. I could play the CD with no problems.
Do you ever get into slightly competitive mode when you're playing, the two of you together?
No, I don't think so. Together, I mean, at the same time? Or, I don't think so. Quite the opposite. I mean, we almost think of each other as one pianist. And, you know, if one gets a concert, for example, if she gets a concert, I'm happy because it feels like I get the concert, except I don't have to work.
So, likewise.
And I get to hear her play sometimes, which is great.
Now, one thing you're doing that's unusual, tonight's concert at Farley's, is you have three works on the program, as I mentioned. You have Stravinsky, you have Brahms, and you have Piazzolla, as arranged by the two of you. And you're playing it on three different, very different pianos.
That's correct.
That's quite amazing. It's a treat. I mean, we have played this program many times. We've done the Petrushka on a tour throughout Siberia.
There's a story behind that, too. I guess the Russians weren't that familiar with Stravinsky, were they?
No, they weren't. And we actually didn't, I'm ashamed to say, we didn't think about that. We wanted a very Russian piece. And then we ended up playing this piece for people that never heard it, which was
it was banned for so long.
Yeah.
Which was an amazing experience. And then we've played the Brahms waltzes and the Piazzolla more recently on a long tour, 30 concerts through the Canadian prairies of Saskatchewan and Manitoba, which was, you know, day after day concerts, which is an amazing experience. But what we have never done is to play these three pieces on three different pianos that actually suit the music very well.
In terms of the history, you mean?
And also mainly the sound and the musical idea that we want to give with this piece.
Okay, so the Petrushka is going to, the Stravinsky is going to be on what piano?
It's going to be on, actually, on a smaller piano, on a Model B, but it's incredibly powerful. It's a 7-foot piano from 1892, and we've selected together with Tim Farley. He had an idea what music would suit the piano, and, you know, without any surprise, it was spot on. Because the Petrushka needs a lot of different colors, and this piano has all these colors in spite of the smaller frame. And then the waltzes will be on a beautiful centennial concert D from 1877, which I've played 2 years ago, and it's beautifully warm and intimate piano. I mean, something that Brahms could have.
Sure, very content. He was writing his, finishing his second symphony in 1877.
Right, and this this piano was actually born, let's say, about 10 years right after the waltzes were composed. So it's kind of interesting to have to play on a piano with these kind of pieces in mind. The intimate sound of the waltzes.
And that's very
leads
special.
Us to the Bax. You're not going to play that on a bandoneon, so I mean to the Piazzolla, I should say. The Piazzolla is arranged by Bax and John.
But it's a more modern instrument, a wonderful D from 1950, with an incredible range, which I think that the tangos need. I mean, emotionally, there are pieces with a huge range, and of course, acoustically too. We're trying to recreate the sound of strings, bandoneon, and so on and so forth. So it's incredibly special, and we're very privileged to have this opportunity. Unusual, very unusual opportunity.
You're playing your transcription on this CD, Alessio. You're playing transcriptions by various people of the music of Bach. Did you use, I presume, the same piano for that, even though the arrangers are various?
Sure. I mean, also for recording, you try to go for a more uniform sound, and that leaves the pianist with more work to do to find different colors. But I think that this piano fit the music, both the original Bach and the transcribers, the grandeur, the sum of transcribers try to convey through Bach's music perfectly.
And this will get us down to the quiz question, just past 12:30. This is Leopold Godowsky's transcription of the Bourré from the Cello Suite No. 3 in C of Bach with Alessio Bax, the pianist. There's some laughter here. We'll get into that in a moment. The Bourée from the Cello Suite in D, originally by Johann Sebastian Bach. The Cello Suite number 3 in C, I should say, as transcribed by Leopold Godowsky and played by one of our two guests today, Alessio Bax, who's here with Lucille Chung, and they are going to be playing tonight at Farley's House of Pianos. Okay, what was so funny about that? I mean, you guys are listening to your own stuff, and that's always, like, almost always a little awkward for a performer.
And it explains it. That's about it.
All right, that's it in a nutshell, although I thought it was, you know, perfectly serviceable. I thought it was great, in fact. Well, thanks for participating in the midday today. Been a pleasure having you here.
Likewise. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Look forward to your return visit, so whenever that may be, to Wisconsin. We'll hope to have you on the air, maybe even playing our piano here.
Love to. Hopefully soon.